It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 555 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week features a special interview with the folks from Oneshi Press, and that includes Linji G and JL Draco. They have a Kickstarter going on for Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter number 1 and 2, a fantasy zombie comedy comic. This half-goblin half-wit's gotta save the world from zombies if he wants to save himself. Bummer. This project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, October 6th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Save himself. He must save us all. Bummer.
It's always a pleasure to talk with the folks from Oneshi Press, and that includes Linji G. How you doing, Linji?
Good. It's so good to be back. Thanks, Wayne.
Good to talk with you. And JL Draco, how are you doing, JL?
Hey, Wayne. I'm doing great. Thanks. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing good. Doing good. Coming out the other side of COVID, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And so things are looking better, which is a good thing. But people don't care about that. Let's talk about the Kickstarter you've got going on right now, which is this is the second in this series. But I was reading you guys have had 10 successful Kickstarters so far?
I can never remember. Hang on, we gotta look it up.
Scroll down a little here.
I think it's
on our page. It shows all of our previous successful Kickstarters, and I think it's up to what is that? That is our 11th. So when this one succeeds, it will be our 12th successful Kickstarter.
Yeah. Wow, congratulations. That's a skill in itself.
Kickstarter. Yeah. We had one false start that we had to redo last time. And, since then it's been on the ups. And hopefully it'll continue that way.
Yeah, we've actually we've taken some classes on Kickstarter funding. And it's paid off for us, but it's also really, taught us that Kickstarter is actually like a huge skill set unto itself.
Oh, many skill sets combined. Yeah. You know, it's a confluence of skill sets.
The one thing I got told, and I always remember it, is one guy that's extremely successful in Kickstarter, I won't say who, but he told me one time that he was talking to somebody, a lady who was good at it, and she said something to him that he never forgot, was that, if you are posting beyond your comfort level on social media, that's where you should be. Don't do less. Don't do less. Don't do your comfort zone. Don't do less. Do more, because what that does is that means you're getting the word out. Because, you know, if you're on like Twitter, your tweet lasts about 10 seconds and then it gets shoved up the list and nobody gets to see it.
Right. So that's a good point.
You gotta keep at it and post and post and post. And every time he gets way beyond his goal, which is always a good thing for him. I'm always happy for him.
Yeah.
But
rules to keep in mind, definitely. Because it starts to feel like you've said the same thing over and over and over again, and people are gonna be annoyed with you for overposting. But the truth of the matter seems to be that most people only see a small fraction of the things that you're actually putting out there. So if you just go past your comfort level, it's more likely that more people will actually see one of those messages that you're trying to get out there to the world.
Yep. And people need to hear what you've got to say. So it's important to get it out there. Have you guys ever tried Indiegogo, or are you primarily Kickstarter? I haven't noticed.
So we just started off on Kickstarter, and we've developed enough of a community around that we've just stayed with Kickstarter. We haven't really seen a reason to kind of switch horses during the race, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
no, we have not.
We really like Kickstarter also because you don't get your funding unless you reach your goal, which sounds like a big bummer. But it also means that if you have a project that is going to cost you $5,000 and you only make $500, you are not then responsible for producing this $5,000 thing with $500.
Right, right. Which is, see, what some people do, they do their Kickstarter and it's successful, and then they shift over to Indiegogo.
Right.
Yeah, that if you already have had a successful Kickstarter and then you're doing an Indiegogo just to get extra sales of that project, that's a brilliant thing. And I actually have been thinking we might want to try that in the future. We've just been trying to build our audience a little bit more before expanding our efforts, you know?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And some people go the other way around. They do Indiegogo first and then they go to Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So I guess it just depends on whatever works for you. That's the thing you got to do. Yeah. So this is the second in the series of Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter, fantasy zombie comedy clinic, a comic, which you call a Zomcom. The description for this time says, this half goblin, half wits, got to save the world from zombies if he wants to save himself. Bummer. kind of a fun little thing for that. So just for people who may not have heard the previous interview we had, where does this Mr. Guy come from?
So do you mean in terms of like who created him and why, or do you mean like in his story?
Where'd the idea come from? And I'm Jill, I know you're the writer, and I think Lindsay, you're the editor, if I've read correctly.
Indeed.
Correct. So where did Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter come from? And we can do the whole thing. I mean, how did you decide to do the comics and stuff like that all together?
So actually, Mr. Guy was a character that I came up with as a, maybe what you'd call like a, I think I was a tween. I wasn't, you know, like 12 or 13 maybe, and just kind of messing around. And I was like making this little goblin character. And at some point, it just kind of developed. I was like, oh, he's a half goblin. And then like one day I was playing around and I was like, oh no, he got bit by a zombie. He only has a certain amount of time now. And then I was like, wait, how come he's still alive? So, you know, as a kid, it was just in play, right? Playing with an OC. I made a little duct tape toy of him and laid around. And that's how the character actually came about. Later on, I was like, continuing to every now and then just draw this character because he was just an old one of my original, my OG OCs, as you could say. you know, so I just continued to draw him and develop him. And I was like, this is actually, you know, pretty funny. Like, let's explore this zombie thing. Let's explore why he's not turning. And then, you know, all of a sudden he had superpowers. Let's explore that. And it was all very fun and lighthearted and silly. And years later, I looked back and I was like, wow, this has some chops. Like, sure, I need to update it and make it a little more serious and a little more, you know, a little more mature and a little more well thought out. Mm-hmm. But like, it made anyone I showed or told about it chuckle. So I was like, hey, let's revamp this. Let's turn this into something that, you know, now, after many years of experience in storytelling, I'm going to revisit. And yeah, it's just been a lot of fun. And I've been doing my best to try to honor that silly little kid who came up with it, while also trying to honor everything that I've learned along the way.
Okay. I always ask this question because I always want to know, where did the name Mr. Guy come from?
You know, originally it was kind of just me being silly. Like, I think I heard someone say to someone else once, like, yeah, okay there, Mr. Guy, you know, like as like an insult.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was so funny. And I was like, Mr. Guy, you know, and it was just like, yeah, he's just Mr. Guy. He's a little guy. So, guys, right? Chris and I, my one of my best friends since childhood, he and I used to, and he's the co-creator of Children of Gaia, one of our ongoing series that we've been working on since the 90s. He and I used to get together and make toys together out of duct tape and cardboard and tinfoil and acrylics and hot glue and everything you can think of that we could get our hands on, we would make little action figures out of and play out our stories. And that's how we wrote, you know, before we were writers, we wrote with toys. And so we'd be like, hey, you want to make guys? And that was our thing. Like when it was like time to sit down and make new figures, it would be guys. We were making guys. So Mr. Guy was just one of my main guys. And he was also kind of generic in a lot of ways, character-wise. So like just Mr. Guy just kind of fit. And then, you know, as I got older, the more I thought about it, the funnier I realized it is. And the more different levels I could work it in, the humor, the wordplay, the, you know. So yeah, that just stuck.
Now, when I was a kid, tell you how long ago this was, I used to cut out figures from the covers of comics and play with them as if they were toys.
Awesome.
That's so awesome. Cute.
I love that.
I always used to do, because this is probably way before your time, Mike Sikowski used to draw Justice League of America.
Oh, yeah.
Way, 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 way back at the beginning. Yeah. And I used to take them I used to have a pencil box, and I used to put the little figures in there. So if class got boring, I could take my little figures out.
That's awesome. Awesome.
They asked my brother one time what was the biggest word he knew, and he said invulnerable.
Ooh.
Because I had Superman, and said, Superman is only affected by kryptonite magic on the list. Then they turned to me and they said, what's the biggest word you knew? I said, Batmobile. That's the one. I guess it kind of explains which ones we like, because I was a Batman fan. He was a Superman fan.
Clearly.
Now, before we get any farther, some people get mad at me because I don't do this soon enough. Your Kickstarter will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, October 6th, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So after you get done listening to this, be sure to get out there and support it, because these guys could use some really good support. And so we want to make sure that gets in there. So we'll say it a couple more times. I always like to do it several times just in case somebody is doing something.
Thank you so much.
So the first one has already come out. We did issue number one. Do you remember when that was?
September 10th, 2020.
Wow. It was the last day of the last campaign.
Right. And we actually, our first attempt at launching it failed. And then we had to reconfigure our campaign and reach out to our audience and change our goals, change our rewards, restructure it as quickly as we could. And we relaunched almost right away and funded almost immediately.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
We learned a lot from that. That was a big moment for us.
Sometimes the best education in Kickstarter is to have your first campaign fail. Then you learn some stuff. It's just so true. I've talked to so many people who said, I started out and I had these lofty things. And some people say you start a Kickstarter at $1. That way you automatically get your goal. And other people say, no, you make it for more than you ever want. There was one Kickstarter I know. I was following it because I was interested in the book. And he had his goal at about $20,000.
Wow.
And he had it for like a week, but he got the $20,000 in about a day. And I thought, what's going to happen? And he started aiming for lofty goals. And he wanted to get $100,000.
Wow.
And of course, I was watching. I was just kind of curious. I had already backed it, and so I didn't want to add any more to it. But it was going to end at 6 o'clock on a Friday night. And so I was looking at it, and about 5 o'clock, I said, I'm going to sit and see what happens. It was about, he had gotten to 95,000 by that time.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, my gosh, I said, you know, it'd be nice if he got the 100,000 because he wanted it so badly. And so I kept refreshing and refreshing and refreshing. He got 100,000 about 20 minutes left.
Yeah.
Wow. He ended up about 105,000 altogether. I thought that was good because, you know, one of the bad things about Kickstarter is some people just can't make the goal or make the pledge they've pledged. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, but that much over that, he's likely to make sure he gets it. I got a kick out of his response to it. He said his wife had to come in and splash cold water on his face on the floor because he was passed out. So I thought that was kind of cute. But the thing about Kickstarter, it's turned into a massive support, especially for comics and stuff. Mm-hmm. You guys got the projects we love this time, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is actually our sixth time with that beautiful green tag. Yeah, we're really happy about that. Yeah.
That's great. And I think they give those out. Sometimes it's because you've had successful ones in the past, it seems like. And so I think that, you know, whatever the reasons are, and I never really understand the reason. That's the only thing I can figure out. But yeah. As long as they do that and they get people like you who are determined to make it work, to give that to you, I think that's a good place to start.
Sure. That's great. My understanding is that there's a matrix of reasons. They have a checklist of what they want to see in your campaign. They have, you know, they want to know that you're trustworthy and that you've fulfilled campaigns without fail, without incident, without complaint. You know, there's a few things going into it.
Because I have, there are some of those that I have supported that I have never seen the stuff I paid for. So yeah, I'm just kind of. Yeah.
We've supported so many campaigns that I couldn't even tell you how many campaigns we never got our packages from. And honestly, I'm okay. Like, whatever. We're happy to support people. If some of them don't come through, like, that's the cost of getting great art from great people. Most of them are great. Most of them are awesome. Every now and then, you're going to be short 20 or 30 bucks, and that's a bummer. But, you know, like, the amount of people who make awesome, incredible projects because they were funded, it far outweighs the amount of people who never fulfill. You know, I don't even think about the people that we don't.
Well, there was one that I remember, and I found out later that he had personal troubles, and he needed the money to pay his bills instead of the Kickstarter. And I said, "Well, that's great, but how can I ever give you money again?"
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's going to happen. So, oh,
you know, you burn that bridge, and that's a bummer. But that's, you know, people make that choice to burn that bridge sometimes. We actually have two special badges. One is Super Backer. And, you know, I love badges. I don't know why. It's just always like cowboys and whatever, space cowboys, you know.
He has a large collection of badges.
It's not large. It's a small.
Well, it's larger than any other badge collection I know of. So.
It's not big. It's just, I have a few badges because I like badges.
Okay.
But we do have the Super Backer badge. We have backed 122 projects. Now, the thing with the Super Backer badge is you won't get that just for backing a million projects. You could back hundreds of projects, but if you're only backing for $1, you're not going to get the Super Backer badge. You only get the Super Backer badge if you're backing at a substantial level, like at a mailing physical reward level. And we've backed 122 projects at the mailing physical reward level. So we are getting hard copies of these comics, and we've backed 122 of them.
So we have the substantial backer Super Backer badge.
Yeah.
Say that five times fast.
It's the Super Backer badge. And but the other thing about that is in doing that, you know, we are integrated into this community. We are committed to this community. Mm-hmm. But also, it's given us a lot to learn from. We see how other people fulfill. We see what we like about the way other people communicate. We see what we don't like. We see, you know, champions of hope and creativity. And then we see, like, sourpusses who just nothing is ever good enough. And, you know, we see the whole gamut, everything in between. And that helps us find ourselves, you know. The other really cool badge that we have is the Backer Favorite badge. And we have that because, like I said, this is our 12th Kickstarter. And we don't get complaints. We don't have people arguing with us or fighting with us because we do everything we can to make every single backer happy. And that's something we're really proud of. We fulfill on time when we say we will. Generally, our projects are near 100% completed when we even launch our Kickstarters. All we have to do is wait for the money to come in and then send it to our printer and then wait for the books to come in and then send them in the mail, you know?
Wow.
So, you know, those are two things that we have going for us that I hope people will, you know, just feel a little more comfortable buying one of our products through Kickstarter, you know? Great. And I like to say buying because I don't feel like we're not out there like, oh, please support us. Like, we're selling awesome products that will entertain people. People write to us to be like, oh man, I read that book. It had me laughing. I reread it. It had me thinking about things differently. You know, like everyone I showed loved it. Like, it's not, you know, we're not, it's different than say like a GoFundMe, my car broke down, I can't afford to fix it, please give me money, you know.
Right.
It's a sales, you know, it's value for value. And I think that that's an important thing to talk about when we talk about this platform, you know.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at my Kickstarter. I have 562 successful pledges so far.
Wow.
Amazing.
I have 110 unsuccessful pledges, and they're almost always because the thing didn't go through, didn't make its goal.
Yeah, totally.
So, but yeah,
that's nothing you can do.
Yeah, I've done Kickstarter for a long time. No.
That's really awesome.
I try to support people if I can, but my problem now is I've got a stack of books that I still need to read. They're about as tall as I am.
Same here.
I've got to. I'm actually cutting over more towards digital when I get the chance to. It depends on my money situation too. I want to.
Yeah, of course.
Support stuff like that. So,
Difficult thing. We do a lot of digitals as well, but the difficult thing with digitals is like you can put them in a folder on your computer and then forget that they're there. But I guess you can also put them in a stack of books and forget that they're there. So really, it's the same problem, just whether it's in real space or digital space.
Well, you know, to put them in a folder. I want to read these kind of folder. Mm-hmm. That's what I try and do. But I don't always remember them.
Yeah.
One of the problems I say when you're doing like podcasts or actually creating comics and stuff like that, it's hard to get the reading done that you want to do because you're so busy doing, you know, this kind of thing, and it's hard. Yeah. But I'm sure you guys face some of that too, is because you know, when you're creating, because you guys have Unnecessary Press. How many creations have you guys put together so far?
Depending on how you count, I think we've published 24, 25 books.
Somewhere around 24 books, I believe. Great. Some of which are comics anthologies, some of which are single issue comics.
Some are zines. Some are illustrated novels. We even have one prose novella that Lindsay wrote that we published earlier in the year, or at the end of last year, rather.
I think the first time I saw you guys was in New York Comic-Con, right?
I think so. A million and 10 years ago, it feels like.
Are you guys going this year?
No, we're mostly going to, we're shying away from the larger cons.
Well, we also, now that we're located in Montana, it's a lot harder to get to a convention and put yourself up, you know, wherever you need to stay. And since the pandemic, we just haven't, I don't know, we haven't felt as motivated.
That's how we ended up with COVID. One of my roommates went off to, was it Mississippi? He went to a convention in Mississippi. Now, we had been 2.5 years without it. And I'm vaxxed to the max, as I like to say. I've had all four shots. And when he came home, I didn't realize he had it. But a day or two later, we were all down flat on our backs.
So, even though we
were all shots, we all had taken all our vaccines and stuff like that. So,
yeah, so that was what happened to me. I actually, my first time doing anything out in public after like 2.5 years of not even like going to the, not even going to restaurants or anything, you know, like just totally isolating. And I was like, you know what? I have all my vaccines. This is great. I'm going to go to this small local con. It's going to be awesome. That was my first time stepping my foot out the door and immediately got COVID. And because Lindsay's immune compromised, I didn't want to give it to her. So we had to completely isolate from each other for like 2 weeks. And that really, you know, it stank for personal reasons, but also for Oneshi work reasons. It just
really cramped our style.
It was a bummer. You know, it was a big bummer. We did both just get the Omicron boosters, so hopefully, you know, that'll help. But yeah,
it's tough out there.
And it took me a while to recover. Like, even though I was positive and I felt mostly better, still for like weeks. Like if I moved too fast, I would feel tired. Like I just, my energy levels fluctuated so much. It was really not great. Yeah.
That's kind of what I've got. I'm almost past the 3 week mark, but I'm still tired. It's hard for me when I wake up in the morning. It takes me a little bit to get up and going. Mm-hmm. Where it, but not so bad before. But you know, we have to. I worry about a relapse or a reoccurrence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That I worry about, but we'll see how we do.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed. Knock on wood.
Let's talk about the book, why don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Talk about that. Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter number one was what came out last time when we talked. Mm-hmm. And that was originally Act One to Save Himself, the original Zomcom, it says. Let me read a little bit of what it says. Is the Mr. Guy is infected with the ZMB virus. Sounds a little familiar. During a routine cow-sitting gig. But rather than undeadifying, he's cursed with the skeletal sidekick named Spooky, who helps him run for his life or fight ferociously against the horde of hungry shamblers. I like that's a new name for zombie shamblers. I like
hungry shamblers.
Yeah, a bedeaded barkeep, an unholy cow, and a mutant zombie from an underground lab. Now, one of the things you do, and I think it's kind of interesting, I don't see this very often, you have multiple stories and they're drawn by multiple people, mm-hmm. which I find interesting. It actually makes it visually a lot more interesting to read as far as that goes. And you got the first one had what, 24 pages?
Of actual like story pages, you know, plot pages. There was 24.
No, there were 32.
In the first one?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Wait, no, yeah, it's...
Four 8-page arcs,
32 pages of actual story, mm-hmm. and then a whole bunch of other like art pages and ancillary pages and pinup pages and fun stuff like that. All of our books, you'll find a lot of extra pages of art and fun stuff. We just love throwing in fun stuff.
Now, you wrote all those stories, right? But you also drew one of them, if I remember correctly.
Is that true? So the idea is I wrote... all of Mr. Guy. And I kicked it off by illustrating the first arc. And then every arc after that is going to be illustrated by a different person. And most of the arcs, I had the illustrator in mind when writing it. There was a couple of instances where that illustrator was no longer available at the time when it came time to like, you know, do the hiring. And so maybe I might have been like, oh, I got to find someone else to illustrate this. And then when I find that other person, I'll go back and retool it to fit them because I want it to feel like every single artist on board is personally invested and putting their all into it, you know? So mm-hmm. I did very much try to write in a way that will pull out the best of what I like about each artist.
Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. I remember reading that one. That was a great one. Now, the new one... is Act Two, The Hecking Heck of It.
The Hecking Heck of It.
Yes, it says here, Mr. Guy and Spooky, who comes with needle powers, must face all the powers of Heck and Dante, survive a doom swamp, outwit a creaky pants Orisha. What's an Orisha, by the way?
An Orisha is the West African Yoruban pantheon. So, and that has... also, of course, you see that in Haitian voodoo and, you know, there are quite a few actually New World translations of the West African Yoruban Orishas. But it's a really, really super cool African pantheon.
Okay, and then they have to negotiate with Eldridge Elder Gods and escape a seriously nutty necromancer. Even worse, they have to spend another whole act together as they try to cure the zombie apocalypse and break the curse that binds them together. So that's number two. Now, this time, you had, of course, the artist that almost everybody knows, Walter Ostley, did one of the stories. And this time, let's say you've got... One guy's name is Stevie Ray Drawn. Ha. If you got no music to get the joke on that one. And James Groling, Daniel Hooker, Michael Abstracto. Is that really his name or is that?
That's the realest Abstracto I know.
Okay. And Renrios are in there. So what, okay, this is the second one. Now he's got a cut across his face.
Oh yeah, that happens in the very end of the first one.
Mm-hmm. And he's got, they're going along, and of course he's, you've got 4 8-page chapters in this mm-hmm. one. Can you give us an idea of what we can look forward to in some of those chapters?
Oh, yeah. So in chapter 5, which is the first chapter of Act 2, so we're continuing right where book 1 left off at Arc 4. This is Arc 5 through 8. And in Arc 5, Mr. Guy meets Dante of Inferno fame. And Dante brings Mr. Guy to Heck so that Mr. Guy can see if the Big D has anything to do with this zombie apocalypse. And to get to the Big D, he has to travel through all of Heck. So there's a lot of different, you know, background jokes and obstacles and things that he comes across, and it really lampoons the Inferno. I actually took a college course on the Inferno specifically. So I had a lot of fun just taking it apart, breaking it down, and just shredding it. And, you know, anyone that is familiar with the Inferno will see a lot of lampooning and satire. Anyone that's not familiar with the Inferno will still get a lot of jokes and a lot of humor and comedy. I tried to balance it out and make sure that if you're not familiar with the Inferno, you'll still get the jokes, you know.
I'm curious as to what a doom swamp is as opposed to a regular swamp. What's that?
So after he travels through Heck, he finds a little coconut with glowing red eyes in the middle of a crossroads that tells him that he's property of this priest, Papa Midnight, who lives in the middle of this swamp. And the swamp, of course, is infested with all kinds of, you know, zombie catfish and zombie gators and zombie snapping turtles and just zombies, you know. So it's a doom swamp because it's like a swamp.
It's trying to kill them.
Plus doom.
Actively trying to kill them. Yeah.
And so he's got to find his way to this priest and see if the priest can help him figure out, you know, anything about zombieism. And the priest happens to be able to summon an Orisha, and in this case, the Orisha of Death, who is, you know, mm-hmm. appropriately named.
Now, how do you decide which artist is going to do which story? Do you write the stories first and then pick the artist? Do you get your artist and then, knowing what that artist's strengths are, write a story to fit that? How do you do it?
Good question.
So there's a little bit of back and forth. I mean, I definitely had James Grolling in mind for the Inferno arc from originally. For Midnight's Bayou, Arc 6, I actually had someone else in mind who was not able to work on it when the time came. And so when I found, you know, that Daniel was available and willing, I was super stoked. And I went back in, I made some notes. But actually, Arc 6, because it deals with, you know, an underrepresented culture, and it's a comedy, and I'm lampooning things, I wanted to be really, really careful. So I had quite a few different cultural sensitivity reads. You know, I hired a few different people for that. So, you know, that was retooled multiple times, not just for Daniel, but also the priest, Dude Midnight. You know, there's some things about his character that I wanted to be extra sensitive about. And, you know, ultimately, people are going to think what they're going to think. But I really did my diligence to be as careful as possible and make this loving character portrayed in a way that is antithetical to, you know, a lot of tropes that we're more familiar with.
Mm-hmm. So no young children or anything like that involved. Or maybe there are. Well, anyway, we'll find out when we read the book. That's the
important. No spoilers.
Yeah, sorry about that. So, so all kinds of good things with that. So I'm just sort of curious. This is Act 2. Do you know how many acts you're going to have altogether in this whole story?
3. There's going to be 4 more arcs after this, not including bonus arcs. So, and what I mean by that is after Midnight's Bayou, Mr. Guy in Void Space ends up meeting H.P. Lovecraft, and Lovecraft takes him to the Void Space where he meets all of the outer ones and elder gods, the Eldritch Horrors and all that, including Cthulhu, who we've already covered in Tarmux, our last Kickstarter, and the same artist, Michel Abstracto, who drew Cthulhu and for the Tarmux comic, is also coming back for this arc. So this one I very much had Michel Abstracto in mind for. It's the same characters, and he's drawn Mr. Guy before. He's drawn this Cthulhu before, our version of Cthulhu. So that was very much in mind for him. And then Ren Rios for Arc 8. Ren is someone that actually submitted to be in one of our anthologies. And I was like, hey, yeah, we really like your story, but how do you feel about doing one of ours instead? And she was more than excited to jump on it. That was really, really cool.
Great.
But we also have an extra, a fifth bonus arc that is a spinoff from Mr. Guy called Castle Big Mart. And that's done by Steve Myers and colored by Whitney Cook. And I think for Act 3, we also have probably at least one bonus arc planned. So there might be more bonus arcs that we'll throw in. Who knows?
Because that one bonus arc is in the same universe, but it's got different people involved.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a spinoff that will eventually tie back in. There is plans for the main character from this bonus arc to cross paths with Mr. Guy eventually.
Oh, wow.
So we're kind of just introducing his character.
I got to apologize. I said Michel Abstracto. It's Michelle, isn't it?
Michel. Yeah.
Michel. Okay. Yep. See, I'm determined not. Beautiful names I never get well. I have to say, I always miss. If it's not Sam or John, I'm always in trouble. So I'm not surprised I messed it up.
We all do the best we can with names.
You know, there should be pronunciation guides in comics. I'm just convinced of it.
Actually, that's not a bad idea.
Because how in the world? I didn't know how to, I would like to tell the story. I didn't know how to pronounce Bill Sienkiewicz. I was at New York Comic Con and he had his booth there. And at the very top was a great big banner that said SIN-Kev in great big letters. Itch at smart. The end. And I laughed out loud when I saw it. I said, finally, I didn't know if it was Sienkiewicz or I don't know what the, how you pronounce it.
Right.
So I'm kind of glad that they did that. Now I had to go in and tell him that was funny. He said, yeah, I got a little tired of that. So I decided it was time to let everybody know. So it's a funny guy. So this one will be, let's see, again, once again, I want to make sure I say this a couple times just so people don't miss out. This is a project will reach its goal on before, hopefully, but it's going to be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, October 6th, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So it sounds like you guys are already working on that third act.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's already all outlined. I even have a couple of artists already picked out for it. Some of it is actually like scripted out. All of it is outlined.
Yeah, wow, JL has a very, I don't know how to call it, like a very efficient writing method that starts with an outline and then can be developed from there really quickly. So it's basically written at this point.
Yeah.
Wow. Because, you know, there's so many writers I know who aren't that efficient with it. It's like an art. And so when they have to be in the mood to write. And so they don't get to it sometimes. And other people are just, they sit down at 8:00 in the morning and they start writing, doggone it. And they're going to write for so many hours and then they're done.
Yeah.
The way I like to think of it is these plot points that come up, those are like the real cathartic moments in writing when you figure out what's going to happen next. And that's the fun part. And a lot of the, you know, the like expository parts of writing, the more, you know, the prose are kind of the footwork. And that has a lot less fun to it, but it's a lot more mechanical. So what I try to do is strike when the iron is hot and get down all my plot points while I'm excited. This way, when I'm not excited, I can just do the footwork of now turning these notes that I took, this outline, into proper sentences and formatting it, right? Formatting it and making proper sentences, I can do that even when I'm not inspired. So when I'm inspired, I just get down all the plot in an outline.
Yeah, it's like a shorthand version of the main thing. Yeah.
Now, I just noticed that you drew one in the first act, but not in the second. So you're in arc. So you're not, this time, you're not gonna draw one in the third?
I am not. I am doing a lot of ancillary illustrations throughout. So between each arc, I have two illustrations. So I'm bookending each arc. And I just really love seeing what other artists are doing with Mr. Guy. And it's so rewarding and so wonderful to work with so many just awesomely talented people that honestly, I was like, I could draw an arc. Maybe I could stick myself in there in each one, but I'd be personally remiss in seeing what each arc could come out with having been done by another person, you know?
Okay. Sounds good. Now, only one thing that I always fuss about Mr. Guy, and especially recently since I've been watching Teen Titans Go a lot recently, and there's one of the characters that bears a resemblance, shall we say, to Mr. Guy.
Sure. Yeah, I get that quite a bit.
I imagine.
Yeah. So there's Beast Boy. I mean, he's green. He's kind of small and has pointy ears. So, you know, I mean, maybe back in the 90s when I was originally developing Mr. Guy, you know, I might have even subconsciously aped off Beast Boy a little bit for the design. But ultimately, I mean, Mr. Guy he's a half goblin, you know, so he gets his greenness from his goblin half, and his ears are somewhere between his goblin half, which might be a little bigger, and his not goblin half, which are a little smaller. So he has like medium pointy ears, you know, and his teeth, all that. So it's just kind of me trying to do an in-between of what I picture his goblin lineage and his non-goblin lineage.
It's not like Beast Boy was the only green character in comics.
Well, I also get Kermit, you know. Kermit. No, I'm kidding.
That's funny. That's funny. So okay. So you've got the end in sight then as far as Mr. Guy goes. Do you know what you're going to do after Mr. Guy?
Well, I have had an idea for a follow-up series of Mr. Guy. So this is book one, like the actual book, is going to be arcs 1, 2, and 3, which have 12 acts altogether. So it's 12 acts, 3 arcs make up book one. And then after that, I have some possible stirrings of loose ideas for book two, which might be another 12 acts.
Wow.
We'll see.
Wow.
I mean, I've been working on this character since the 90s. I mean, I can probably keep going, you know, if it's in the cards for me to do so.
Right. Well, the real joy, I think, one of the real joys, I should say, that JL has in writing this is that he's basically taking on all of these pop culture tropes, you know, from the whole way back to the Inferno and, you know, forward to sci-fi kind of stuff, and really getting to like tear them apart and have a lot of fun with them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that idea can keep going going and going. So there's plenty of room for Mr. Guy to keep hacking his way through zombies.
Sure. We've done like, you know, in arc one, there's like some very clear Resident Evil references. There's some Dusk Till Dawn references. You know, there's like all kinds of just loving lampooning going on, you know, loving satire.
Sounds good. Sounds like lots of fun coming. Mm-hmm. Now, Lindsay, I haven't asked you much. I've been talking about Mr. Guy so much that... what about Oneshi Press? What else is coming out from Oneshi Press that we should be aware of?
Oh, well, the next thing that we're going to be working on after Mr. Guy concludes is our next anthology, which will be our 12th comics anthology.
Wow.
We're pretty excited about it. We've come a long way from our first anthology, which was short and included some of our work. And I think there were like two other comics in it from people we knew. and now... we're up to, I don't even know at this point, somewhere around 12, 13, like 14 comics. We've been working with dozens of people on our most recent ones. I think this one is going to be around 140 pages, and the theme is destinations.
Wow. Wow. Have you any idea when that's going to come out?
Well, we're going to be kickstarting it in November into December. The book will probably be out to people early next year.
Okay, great. You're going to kickstarter that as well?
Yeah. Yeah. For a while, we were not kickstarting the anthologies. They were sort of like our passion projects. Mm-hmm. And we actually funded them sort of out of our pockets. And then we realized, like, why not kickstart them? Anthologies do quite well on Kickstarter, but they're actually a little bit more difficult to get into people's hands off of Kickstarter. So as of last year, we did our first Kickstarter exclusively for an anthology project, and it went really well. We had a really fun time with it. Because one of the cool things that you get with an anthology is the ability to share audiences with all of the people who are in the book. So we reached a wide audience of people that we might not have reached otherwise. And it really, I don't know, it was a lot of fun. And we got to pay out bonuses to people at the end of the Kickstarter, which felt really good.
Yeah,
so
that was nice.
It's something we're looking forward to doing again.
Great, great. So maybe I'll have to talk when that comes around to talk about that.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Definitely.
So once again, though, let's wrap up by saying that, again, the goal is to be reached by Thursday, October 6th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We didn't say what the goal was, I don't think. The goal is like $5,500, and you're well on your way there as we're talking. So now is the time, once we get done talking, to head out there, go to Kickstarter and look for Mr. Guy, Zombie Hunter number 1-2. A fantasy zombie comedy comic.
Well, we try to make these as difficult as possible.
We do have a lot of fun with like alliteration and you know,
probably a little bit too much fun.
Certainly worked on me, I'll have to tell you.
I think if you just look up Mr. Guy, it'll come up though. And we always make a vanity URL that is municipal. So anytime we have any Kickstarter going on, you can go to kickstarter.oneshipress.com and it will go to whatever our most recent Kickstarter is.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. And much success to you guys as you continue on. I'm looking forward to a successful conclusion to Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter, the second one. And we'll see what other good things come in the future. So if people want to keep up with Oneshi Press, how do they do that? Lindsay, how about you?
Well, we are at Oneshi Press on pretty much all social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Oneshi Press. And you can always visit our website, oneshipress.com, to see what we're up to. And you can link from there to our online store if you're interested in seeing the things that we've published. We've also got a blog, etc. And like JL said, you can always see what we're up to on Kickstarter if you're interested in getting in on the newest thing at kickstarter.oneshipress.com.
Okay, how about regular social media, Lindsay? How do they find you on there?
Well, I'm one of those people who has an unfortunate tendency to forget what my handle is in one place and then do something different in another place. So I'm kind of scattered as far as how you can find me. But if you search for Lindsay G on most social media platforms, you probably will be able to find me. And that is spelled differently. It's Lynsey.
Two Y's, but they're not where you think.
All right. And now, JL, how about you? How do people find you on social media?
I am JL Draco everywhere. So JAYELDRACO on Twitter, on Facebook, on Twitch, on Instagram, on Tumblr, on LinkedIn, you name it.
LinkedIn is a thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I do use LinkedIn. They always tell me to put it on LinkedIn. What if somebody is looking for somebody with the skills you've got? If you put the stuff out on LinkedIn, some people might come across it. So I said, well, okay, I'll do it. It might actually find somebody who's interested in what I'm doing too. So I like to do that. So I put that under. Well, you guys are great fun to talk with, and I'm looking forward to the successful conclusion for Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter 1-2, and more great things from you guys at Oneshi Press in the future. So keep up the wonderful stuff.
All right.
Thank you so much.
It's been great talking to you, Wayne.
So good talking to you, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol,
get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.